Our study begins at this time in the 9th chapter of Judges, and we're now at the 7th verse. The setting for this passage is that the people of Shechem have just elected Abimelech to be their king. Abimelech was the illegitimate son of Gideon, and it seemed that Abimelech had more or less conned the people into selecting him to be their king. He had implied that the other 70 sons of Gideon wanted to rule over the nation, which was not true at all. And so he reasoned thus that it would be better for them to have one ruler than to have 70 rulers. He also appealed to the fact that he was their kinsman, and he was the brother to some of these people of Shechem, and so that this would be to their benefit if he were the king. And so they gave him money, and he hired some lower class people to go with him, and they slew the 70 sons of Gideon, all except for one son, Jotham, and then Abimelech was made their king. This made Shechem to be in the position of rebelling against the general order of things in Israel, and consequently it definitely put this city in a bad light in the eyes of God and the rest of the nation. But the rest of the nation allowed it to happen. They didn't do anything to change this. They didn't do anything to bring about vengeance on the death of the 70 sons of Gideon, and consequently they would be equally guilty then for this despicable act. So we begin in verse 7 of this 9th chapter. And when they told it to Jotham, now Jotham of course was the youngest son of Gideon, and he no doubt felt some kind of an obligation or duty to, if not get vengeance on those who had slain his brothers and mistreated his family, to at least expose them and to show them the very great mistake that they had made. So when they told it to Jotham, he went and stood in the top of Mount Gerizim and lifted up his voice and cried and said unto them. Now, as we know, Mount Gerizim is one of the two mountains with Mount Ebal that was located close to this city of Shechem, and it was where the blessings and the curses were given. Mount Gerizim happened to be the mountain that the blessings were given from. And according to some of the historians, the leaders and prominent people of Shechem were probably at the foot of this mountain having some kind of a ceremony. And so Jotham took this opportunity to, when they were in a position where he could reach them, go up on this mountain and speak to them. He lifted up his voice and cried and said unto them, "Hearken unto me, ye men of Shechem, that God may hearken unto you." Now he is going to give a parable here, and this parable is going to not only tell us a story about what has happened, but it's also going to include a warning to this people. The people of Shechem had done wrong. They had transgressed. They had gone beyond what God intended to happen, and so they needed to be rebuked. And that's what Jotham is going to do here. And consequently, when a person or a group have so transgressed the will of God, they put themselves in a position where God won't hear them. God will not hear their prayers, their pleas, their cries, and so the rebuke has to come in and a correction has to be made before God will hear them. And that's what Jotham is telling them. Listen to me, ye men of Shechem, that God may hearken unto you. If you ever want God to listen to you, if you ever want God to be your helper and your benefactor, then you got some changes to be made, and you must listen to what I have to say to you. You must listen to the reason here so that you can, in due time, come into the good graces of God again, that God may hearken unto you. And true it is, when we're sinners, we have some changes to be made. We have some correcting to be done before God will hear us. And sometimes a person who knows how wrong we are may have to move in and correct us, give us a rebuke, and have us to hearken to it before then God will hearken to us. And so he begins this parable in verse 8. The trees went forth on a time to anoint a king over them. Now he is depicting this nation as the trees. These are the people in common. And so they wanted to anoint a king over them, and they said unto the olive tree, "Reign thou over us." But the olive tree said unto them, "Should I leave my fatness, wherewith by me they honor God and man, and go to be promoted over the trees?" Now they chose the olive tree to be king. The olive tree was a productive tree. It produced a fruit. It was something that was very useful to man. and the olive tree refused to go and become king. The olive tree chose rather to continue to be productive, to continue to be a servant, in that it produced its fruit, and so it simply said, "Should I leave my fatness, wherewith by me they honor God and man, and go to be promoted over the trees?" It just wasn't appropriate for this olive tree to leave what it was made here for and to go rule over the trees. And as we know, Gideon had refused to rule over the trees. He'd refused to become the king. He said, "God is your king. I'll not be your king. Nor will my sons be your king." It was not the will of Gideon at all. And all the previous judges had taken this very same stance. They had agreed to judge. They'd agreed to do the things that they were qualified to do, but none of them would allow themselves to be put into the position of king. That was not the will of God for this nation at this time. And so that's the gist of this parable now that Jotham is giving. Verse 10, "And the tree said to the fig tree," now they went to another productive tree, "Come thou and reign over us. But the fig tree said unto them, Should I forsake my sweetness and my good fruit and go to be promoted over the trees?" So the fig tree turned them down also. The fig tree said, I'll continue to do the things that I'm made to do. I'll continue to produce my fruit, my sweetness, and my good fruit. And it's not appropriate for me to forsake that and go to be promoted over the trees. Then said the trees unto the vine, "Come thou and reign over us." And the vine said unto them, "Shall I leave my wine, which cheereth God and man, and go to be promoted over the trees?" So the vine tree also was a productive plant. It produced the wine, and it refused to leave this duty and this job of producing wine and go to be promoted over the trees. And so we see then how that the productive trees, the trees that bore fruit, turned down this desire, this request on the part of the other trees to be the ruler. And the lesson here is that the judges that God had set up over this nation of Israel over the past decades, they had all done the same thing. They had done what they were qualified to do, but none would usurp themselves to the position of being the king or the ruler over the other trees. But in verse 14, "Then said all the trees unto the bramble, Come thou and reign over us." Now the bramble was a different type of a plant altogether. The bramble was not a productive tree. It was a lowly bush. It was one that had no good use. As a matter of fact, the bramble could do you harm and damage. It could tear your flesh. It could be in a position to be in the way rather than to be of any benefit. It did not cast a shade, and it did not produce any fruit. So they turned to the bramble after all the fruitful trees had refused to rule over them. Verse 15, "And the bramble said unto the trees, If in truth you anoint me king over you, then come and put your trust in my shadow." Now, the bramble tree asked them to put their trust in its shadow. Its shadow wasn't a very big shadow, of course, and the people would have to stay in the shadow if they got any benefit from it, though, because to touch this bramble, to come into actual contact with it, would put them in danger of actually having their flesh torn, because it could do them harm. It was not a productive and fruitful tree. So, come and put your trust in my shadow. Now, you can see what a tenuous thing this is, then, in this parable, for all the other trees of the forest to be putting their trust into the shadow of a bramble. None of the other trees that they asked would accept this position of being the ruler, the king, but the bramble would if they would put the trust in the shadow. And that's what we do today whenever we forego the things that God has given us to be our leader, our ruler, our spiritual guide, and we turn to man to let man guide us, then we're simply putting our trust in a shadow of a bramble. And then the bramble further says, "And if not, let fire come out of the bramble and devour the cedars of Lebanon." And so he's giving them two ways to go. Either trust me, let me be the ruler, and if you do not want to trust me, then there's going to be trouble. Fire will come out of the bramble and devour the cedars of Lebanon. I'll start a fire. Now, whether the bramble could actually do this or not is not stated here, but it's part of the threat, a part of the general picture of things that the bramble, and of course in this case it was Abimelech, this illegitimate son of Gideon they were talking about, as part of his threat to be able to be propelled into this position of king. In verse 16, we find that Jotham begins to make an application of this now. He is going to come to some conclusions, and he's going to place them in a position of having to make some kind of a decision about their actions. Verse 16 says, "Now, therefore, if you have done truly and sincerely, in that you've made Abimelech king, and if you've dealt well with Jerubbaal and his house, and have done unto him according to the deserving of his hands." Now here is the big if. If you've done the right thing by making Abimelech the king, and if you truly did deal correctly with Jerubbaal and his house, that is Gideon and his 70 sons whom you have just slain, then that's going to be one thing. But before he gets on to this conclusion, he begins in verse 17 to explain to them what all Gideon had done and how Gideon had truly been deserving of a much better fate for his family than they gave him. So beginning in verse 17, "For my father fought for you and adventured his life far and delivered you out of the hand of Midian." Of course, we just had the story of Gideon and how he did these things, how he raised this army, and how God was with him, and how they did deliver the nation from this terrible plight of the Midianites. Verse 18, "And you are risen up against my father's house this day, and have slain his sons, 70 persons upon one stone, and have made Abimelech, the son of his maid servant, king over the men of Shechem, because he is your brother." Now that's all one big parenthesis, and it's simply Jotham giving them the details now as he comes to a conclusion about this and makes an application of this parable. Gideon had done well. He fought for them, gave his life for them, and delivered them out of the hand of the Midianites. But you've risen up against his house this day. You've slain his 70 sons upon one stone, and you made this man Abimelech, who was the son of his maidservant, he was an illegitimate son. You really should be hiding the fact that Abimelech even existed rather than propelling him into kingship over the nation. And you've done it because he is your brother. That is, you're going to get some kind of political advantage by putting your kinsman into this position of king. Verse 19, "If you then have dealt truly and sincerely with Jerubbaal," which is, of course, Gideon, "and with his house this day, then rejoice ye in Abimelech, and let him also rejoice in you." So Jotham's putting it to him like this: if you've really done the right thing, if you're pleased with what you've done, if this is justice, if this is the righteous thing to do, then rejoice. You rejoice in Abimelech, and let him also rejoice in you. You ought to all be very happy and very pleased about what you've done. But in verse 20 he says, "But if not, let fire come out from Abimelech and devour the men of Shechem and the house of Millo." Of course, the house of Millo was the city council, or the governors that really voted him into this office of king. So, if not, we're going to have a scene in which Abimelech does you harm. Fire is going to come out from him. It's going to devour you. "And also, let fire come out from the men of Shechem and from the house of Millo and devour Abimelech." You're going to be found to devour each other. Fire is going to come from one and devour the other, and then fire is going to come from that one and devour the one. So that you're going to have a great conflict. You're not going to have a happy, peaceful relationship. You're not going to be able to rejoice and to be content and to have prosperity as a result of this thing, but it's going to be your downfall. Verse 21, "And Jotham ran away and fled and went to Beer and dwelt there for fear of Abimelech and his brother." So it seemed that Jotham just made this speech hastily. His very life was probably in danger while he was doing it. And as soon as he finished the speech, he ran away and fled. He ran for his life. Not only was he afraid of what people of Shechem might do to him, but he was definitely afraid of Abimelech, because Abimelech went over there and killed all of his brothers, and he alone escaped. His life was marked for death just a very short while before. He had escaped, and after this speech, he knew that Abimelech would then be after him. So he went to a place called Beer. We do not know exactly where that was. It's some remote area, no doubt. And he dwelt there for fear of Abimelech and his brother. So he ran for his life after he made the speech. But he did get the message across, and I'm sure he did put some of the people to thinking in Shechem. But nevertheless, he told them what was going to happen, what was going to be, and then he had served his function. He didn't really threaten them with any kind of personal retaliation. He just simply let them know that if the thing that they had done was not good, they would come to a bad end by having conflict among themselves. Verse 22, when Abimelech had reigned 3 years over Israel, then God sent an evil spirit between Abimelech and the men of Shechem, and the men of Shechem dealt treacherously with Abimelech. So now we see that Abimelech did reign for 3 years, and we don't know what happened during that three-year time, whether there was peace and prosperity or what, but after 3 years, which was long enough for them to really find out the true character of each other, then God sent an evil spirit between Abimelech and the men of Shechem. This evil spirit that God sent, we don't know whether this was actually the spirit of Satan himself, or whether this was just the natural enmity and jealousy and strife that arise between men in the absence of God. But anyway, there was this evil spirit that arose between Abimelech and the men of Shechem. There was friction now. There was a feeling of ill will, and there was also the intent to do one another harm. And it says this road between Abimelech and the men of Shechem, and the men of Shechem dealt treacherously with Abimelech. He was the king. They had put him into this position of king. Now they weren't so happy with him. Now they were wanting to remove him one way or another, and they dealt treacherously with him. Now this next verse, verse 24, is going to show why God sent this evil spirit between Abimelech and the men of Shechem. There's a purpose for it. God is carrying out his desire to rectify, to punish, to chastise them for an evil that they've done. Verse 24 states that the cruelty done to the 70 sons of Jerubbaal might come, and their blood be laid upon Abimelech, their brother, which slew them, and upon the men of Shechem, which aided him in the killing of his brethren. So both the men of Shechem and Abimelech were guilty of this slaying of these 70 sons of Gideon. They were guilty for having connived the thing together. One group gave the other one the money to do it, and he hired these men to go help him. And so we see that they're both equally guilty. And so God caused this bad spirit to arise between them so that they're doing each other harm. And really what's happening here, although they think that they're each one satisfying their vengeance against the other, it's really God getting vengeance against both of them. And he's using each of them as tools. They have their own intent for what they're doing, but he's using them as tools to carry out his intent. And that is to bring about vengeance on both parties. Abimelech on the one hand, and the men of Shechem on the other. Verse 25, and the men of Shechem sent liars in wait for him in the top of the mountains, and they robbed all that came along that way by them, and it was told Abimelech. So these men of Shechem now that are dealing treacherously with Abimelech, they have sent out men to lay in wait in the mountains. They're waiting for a chance to get Abimelech. But while they're there, they turn out to be robbers and marauders. They are robbing all that come along that way, so that it makes the highways not only very unsafe, but these men are in a position of living entirely without the law. And it was told Abimelech. Abimelech now knows that they're lying in wait for him. He knows what their plans are, and he also knows that they are robbing those that come that way so that they are a menace to society. Now in verse 26 we have a new character to enter onto the scene to add to the problems here. And Gaal, the son of Ebed, came with his brethren and went over to Shechem. And the men of Shechem put their confidence in him. So here we have Gaal rising up as a leader. He's the son of a man named Ebed, and this word Ebed means a servant. And there could be some ironical meaning here, because we remember now that Abimelech was also the son of a servant. His mother was a servant. And so Gaal, his competitor now, is the son of a servant. And the men put their confidence in him. They no longer wanted to follow Abimelech. They were living outside of the law of order that Abimelech might have set up. And so there are two factions now, one led by Gaal, one led by Abimelech. Verse 27, "And they went out into the fields and gathered their vineyards and trod the grapes and made merry and went into the house of their God and did eat and drink and cursed Abimelech." So we see what these men are doing now. They're probably going about a part of their harvest, gathering the grapes and trodding them, but also drinking and making merry and going into the house of their God, this idolatrous God, and they were cursing Abimelech. Now, no doubt word of all this came back to Abimelech. Here these men were working themselves up into a passionate fervor of a dislike for Abimelech, and you can see then this is going to lead to some kind of a conflict between the two groups. So we have Abimelech and his forces on the one hand, and Gaal and the men of Shechem that are following him on the other hand. We're going to close at that point. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying goodbye, friends.